You know, the world right now is a really unsettled place. And for such a time as this, women play a most important role in history as peacemakers. The goal of Ladies of Liberty Sound Off is to affect the lives of women in an empowering way through discussion of important issues of the day. So, are you ready? The Ladies of Liberty are ready to sound off.
Many schools in America are having a week in which they call for the disruption of the Western nuclear family by implementing this BLM week, a week of action, and that's what they want to talk about to our kids in school. I don't know about you ladies, but if I had kids in school this week, I would take them out of school because this is not something that I think that schools should be teaching. And I feel like for schools to call for the disruption of the Western nuclear family and to tell kids that they are white supremacists and that kids of color are oppressed by whites is just despicable to me. It's not anything that belongs in school. So I want to do a little quick history lesson before we talk about this so that people understand what Black Lives Matter is, how it started, and what its mission is. And I'll be quick about it, but I think it's important for people to know because I don't think that many people really understand what this organization is. It sounds like it's an organization that is going to uplift and help people of color, and that's couldn't be further from the truth. So the Black Lives Matter movement was founded by three women, Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, and Opal Tamati in 2013, following the acquittal of George Zimmerman, as you remember in the Trayvon Martin case. The San Francisco-based Garza, she was in San Francisco. She was an organizer with a minority labor union advocacy group called National Domestic Workers Alliance. And she and her two fellow ladies started Black Lives Matter. The point, in their own self-described point of what Black Lives Matter organization was at the time of its founding and still remains, is, and I quote, a chapter-based national organization working for the validity of Black life and working to rebuild the Black liberation movement. According to their own statement, the movement is rooted in the experiences of American Blacks who actively resist their dehumanization. They stated that their movement is an ideological and political intervention where Black lives are systematically and intentionally targeted for demise. Their foundational statements include, but are not limited to, assertions that Blacks are deprived of basic rights and human dignities. They are victims of systematic extrajudicial killings and genocide at the hands of law enforcement and vigilantes, and they bear the burden of state-sponsored Darwinian experiments that attempt to squeeze them into boxes of normality defined by white supremacist state violence. The organization does not hide that it is a Marxist organization, that it is found on Marxist principles. And people need to understand that it is not an organization that strives for the betterment of people of color. It is not an organization that collects money and donates it for the betterment of people of color. It has been an organization that is a Marxist organization. It seeks to create chaos. It seeks to defund police departments. It seeks to follow the Marxist theme of just disrupting society and creating chaos between the races. Ladies, what's your thought?
Well, thank you, Linda, for bringing this issue to light. The BLM Week of Action, you're exactly right. It's not meant to uplift, you know, Black citizens. And in fact, you know, there's a whole trans and gender ideology intertwined with their Week of Action. It centers on 13 BLM guiding principles. And one of the guiding principles is about trans antagonistic violence. And it's indoctrinating our children with this gender ideology. And they've made some headway in recent years, I believe. Well, the National Education Association is also promoting this week on their website, including giving material to these schools that want to proceed with this week of action. Thankfully, you know, my children's schools are not following this. But I really fear this type of activism is only going to increase in the coming years, because you have seasoned teachers who are a little bit older, who have been teaching for decades, are now retiring. And you have a new crop of teachers coming in from these universities that promote this type of social justice curriculum. And I think it's going to get harder and harder to try and eliminate. Also, BLM, you know, my children attend Jewish day schools. It's an anti-Semitic organization. Their original platform called Israel an apartheid state and asked them to stop, you know, quote unquote, their genocide against the Palestinian people. And I saw how, you know, they even made headway within the Jewish community. I had friends who told me, oh, we'll set aside, you know, their views on Israel and, you know, we'll march with them in support of, you know, quote unquote, social justice. This is also really upsetting to me, is that they're able to infiltrate these groups of people who they hate, and they, you know, they promote anti-Semitism as well. They're an anti-Semitic organization. That's worrisome to me.
Isn't it interesting that they want equity for themselves, but yet they're still discriminating against another whole class of people? That doesn't make any sense to me. And what they said, what they're saying in their starter kit that they're giving to our kids, is that the group has four national demands that includes funding counselors, not cops. It's one of their main things, is to defund the police departments. And they want to mandate Black history and ethnic studies in classrooms. You know, I don't mind if we teach Black history and ethnic studies, but you have to do it in concert with everything else. So it's not one over the other. It's an entire program, because there's different communities of people within our nation. And if we're going to talk about one, then we should talk about all. They also want, in their curriculum, they want it to center on their 13 of their Black Lives Matter guiding principles, which includes concepts such as Black villages and globalism, where the family is not what's important, but we have these communities that can raise our kids. I don't know. In my mind, what I think right there is gangs. I mean, gangs have become a lot of these people's communities. And I don't object to having, you know, people help other people with raising children, but there's a bigger problem in the Black community with single moms and dads that are absent, where they don't have families. So therefore, maybe they feel that they need the community help. But I think that they ought to focus on, you know, getting pregnant when you're ready to get pregnant, have a child, and have a nuclear family. That is the foundation and bedrock of who we are as America.
Well, what I don't understand, what's always sort of brought questions to my mind about that whole issue of, you know, families and nuclear families and intact families within the Black community. What I don't understand is why the leaders of the Black community have never promoted that, have never spoken out and sort of looked inward as to what the problems are with the social structure of the Black community. And to me, you know, I'm looking at, I'm always waiting for someone like Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton or one of these self-proclaimed leaders of the Black community to stand up and sort of correct whatever issues there are within their own community, as opposed to constantly, you know, claiming that they're victims. And, you know, that's what bothers me about it. I have no problem whatsoever teaching our kids Black history. We had Black History Month when I was in school as well. I mean, I think that there's a lot to learn from that. I don't have a problem with that whatsoever, but it's no longer Black History Month in the way that it was. Instead of celebrating the accomplishments of the Black community and promoting the accomplishments of the Black community, it's now, you know, the victimization of the Black community. And as a result of that, it's, you know, it's blaming everybody else. It's, you know, taking all of their, you know, everything that they think that they should stand for and making it somebody else's fault. And that's what bothers me about the whole thing. So at some point, I feel like everybody has to stand up and sort of look out for themselves. And I don't want to be so ideological or anything like that, but where are the leaders in the Black community calling for intact families? And now they're saying they want to break up the Western nuclear family. What good is that going to do? What's that going to solve?
Well, what it's going to solve is the point of their organization. Again, when you have a Marxist organization, that would be their goal. And the BLM movement is not sporadic. It's not disorganized. It's not haphazard. It is organized. It is well-funded. It's media savvy. It's a national and international movement based on revolutionary Marxist ideology. And the movement seeks to systematically, attack and diminish and eventually overthrow the rule of law and the democratic form of government that we have in our country. That is the goal. And Alisa, your question is one that I've asked hundreds of times. We have wonderful leaders in the Black community, absolutely wonderful leaders, not the Jesse Jacksons, not the Al Sharptons. These are people that seek to keep their people down because they benefit from it, especially financially. But we do have wonderful, wonderful leaders in the Black communities, and we need them to speak up louder, and we need them to you know, tell the truth about this organization, and they do. But like you say, that the false narrative about the police oppressing people of color, about the police committing violence on people of color, that is absolutely a false narrative. There's not a single study that you can show that shows that to be true. But what it is, it's a false narrative that has been repeated so many times that people believe it. And it's patently untrue. And as you both know, and I don't know if our audience knows that my husband is a forensic criminologist. He studies this all the time. He does the facts and figures. In fact, we talk about it on our Talking While Married show every evening on America Out Loud. And he literally wrote the book called The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police back in 2016. And the book, which is a best-selling book, explains everything about who Black Lives Matter is and about the cases like Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown, Freddie Gray, the truth about those cases. And it's very interesting that most people don't seem to have the truth. They have the rhetoric, and that's what's frustrating. And for our schools to be teaching our children as young as 5 years old to become little activists like this and tell them that we, the white people, are oppressing the people of color, I just think that's a despicable thing for schools to do.
Linda, you bring up a good point going back on Black leadership. You know, the problem is, I think the BLM movement, you know, because it was so progressive and trendy, particularly in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd, the organization drowned out a lot of other voices, like Robert Woodson, you know, who founded the Woodson Center, which empowers community-based leaders. That was a lot, you know, that was an issue with the BLM movement, but those leaders are out there. You know, just to strike a little bit of an optimistic tone, I think some of the shine is starting to come off BLM. And thanks to, in large part, to the New York Post has been covering this issue over the last few weeks. just about the corruption within the organization and their abuse of donor dollars. Patrice Cullors, who was one of the founders, resigned last May after, you know, she bought over $3 million in real estate. And I guess it's been reported that she also sent $6 million to her wife's organization in Canada, which in turn bought a $6 million mansion in Toronto. So support for BLM is declining. I think a progressive media poll was conducted by Civics in recent weeks that showed 44% of respondents are opposed to BLM, which is a drop of almost 10% since, 18 months ago. And those who are opposed to BLM is up from 28% to 44%. So we see some cracks starting to emerge in those who back BLM. What I'm worried about are the residual effects of the movement, which has sanctified this activist-based learning, which I think is going to be a part of our children's schools in years to come.
And our leaders have, you know, given them, basically they've given them the go-ahead on things that they were doing, like the rioting, the burning, the looting. Nobody got punished for that. And that's not the way to be running a country. Areed, I have to take a tiny issue with one thing that you said, and that is the killing of George Floyd. George Floyd was not killed by that police officer. And there's no forensic evidence that says that that's true. He had a fatal dose of drugs that he took in his system. The police officer's actions were considered contributory, but there is no evidence of, despite what they say, if you look at the forensic actual coroner's reports, there's no evidence that the officer's knee was on his neck, that impeded breathing in any way, any of the things that you heard in the media. So what the officer did was absolutely out of policy and wrong. Okay, there's no doubt about that. But that is not what caused the death of George Floyd. And again, it's a false narrative that we've heard so many times in the media that people think that it's true.
Well, that's definitely true, Linda. I don't think the majority of people know those facts that you just stated about George Floyd, because no one's really going to come out and say that. And of course, the officer is now in prison and so forth. But, you know, it seems to me that the entire movement of Black Lives Matter, and I agree with Areed that I do think that some people, it is starting to come out a little bit, it's dripping out that the corruption that's going on within the Black Lives Matter movement, but I still think that they have momentum. I feel like they have momentum. And, you know, I think that you could shout it from the rooftops, all the things that you just said about the killing of George Floyd, no matter what. It's always going to go down that officer killed George Floyd because of the power of the media. So, you know, that's where I see the trouble is, you know, they have momentum, and that momentum has crept into the schools, and the schools have bought into it, and the NFL has bought into it, and corporations have bought into it, and it's become pervasive. And how do we undo that? Like, how is their momentum going to be stopped, and when and why? And, you know, it kind of goes along with, you know, in the past, would we have seen a lawsuit from a Black NFL coach who didn't get the job that he was interviewing for because they hired somebody who wasn't Black instead? I don't think there ever in the past would have been a big lawsuit against the entire NFL and all 32 teams about this, because the NFL has historically hired Black coaches and have many Black people in leadership. And I'm not so sure. These are the effects of the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, as time goes on, we're going to see more and more people claiming racism just because they're Black. You know, look at the Joe Biden issue. He said he's only going to nominate a Supreme Court justice because if they're a Black woman. Well, at what point does it just become about, you know, about merit? It's no longer about merit. So, you know, these are the residual effects, I think, of that this whole Black Lives Matter movement and the things that we're going to be fighting for a long time to come.
Alisa, you bring up a good point, and, you know, about Biden's Supreme Court, you know, potential nominee, and the Brian Flores case in the NFL. And again, it's about equality versus equity. And, you know, the NFL, I'm not sure when it was instituted, but it was the Rooney Rule, which was a Yes. rule enacted by the league, which requires teams to interview, you know, at least one, maybe two minority candidates for head coaching positions. And this is a problem, you know, you run into when you start enacting these rules. Now, the NFL, they have historically come under fire for having a lack of Black coaches. I think there are 32 NFL teams and over half of their players are Black. And I think there are only three Black coaches currently. So there is a dearth of black coaches. You know, whether or not, you know, Flores's you know, lawsuit will go anywhere, I guess is up to, you know, up to the lawyers. But, you know, it just underscores the problem our society faces when we start implementing these rules.
Well, and, you know, I was reading about this issue, and, you know, apparently this coach had some anger issues, some temper issues, and some people didn't like that. So I understand why he's upset when one of the managers that he's suing, I guess, that he was going to be interviewing with, when he texted him, thinking he was texting the guy who got the job, before he even got interviewed, he texted that, you know, congratulations, you got the job. And Flores was upset about that because he hadn't even been interviewed. But, you know, as an employer, I can tell you that, just say that I'm going to interview three people, and the second person comes in and this person is perfect. I have the right as an employer to say, you've got the job. I mean, I'm satisfied that I found what I needed before I even interview that third person. I have that right to do that. And I feel that coach had that right to do that too. You know, it's a bigger issue to me. And I want to go back just for a second to the schools, because rather than teach our students that we are oppressors or the oppressed, everything that matters to our students should be that their efforts and their behavior in life dictate how far they will get in life. It's not that somebody else is holding them down. There are any number of people of color in this country, including NFL football players and coaches, that are people of color that are, you know, doing extremely well for themselves. It's about their efforts. It's about their talents, their efforts, their behavior, because if at the end of the day, you're the most talented person in the world, and we see this, by the way, in the NFL all the time, yet your behavior is bad and you know, pull a gun on somebody or you sexually assault somebody, the rest of it doesn't matter because you're going to go down for that anyway. So it's about teaching our kids their efforts, their talents, their behavior in life is what's going to get them far. It's not about teaching them that somebody else is oppressing them and you are the oppressed, because if somebody was to tell me that I am oppressed, if somebody were to have told me when I went into the police department in 1975 and there were very few women there, that I was oppressed and that I was going to be discriminated against, you know, and maybe they did tell me that, but I never bought those arguments. I never thought that there was a glass ceiling for me, and I still don't. So that's what we need to be teaching our young people, is effort, responsibility, and behavior is what is going to make them successful. And that what we're teaching our students is the opposite.
There's no question about that. I look back even at the time when I was a network producer, and that was back in, like the 90s and the early 2000s. And I never once felt that because I was a woman, that I was going to be held back or I was not eligible for a managerial or an executive type position. Not one time. It was always, and I also, there were also so many women that held the executive positions at that time. I never even understood why this whole thing came about, that women were discriminated against. I mean, it was such a women-dominated industry. Or maybe it was still, I don't want to say it was a women-dominated industry because there were plenty of men there and still are, but never once did I ever feel that I didn't get a job that I wanted, or I didn't get promoted, or I didn't get a chance to have my story on the air because I was a woman. It was never even an issue. So all of a sudden now, these young women who, say that things are unfair for them and they're not eligible for jobs and they're discriminated against and so forth. I don't get that. It wasn't happening back then, and maybe it's happening now, but to me, it just seems like if you work hard and if you really want, you want to get promoted, you want a managerial type position, whatever it is, this whole country is founded on merit. Why shouldn't all of these women, have the exact same opportunities? And they do. And it doesn't make any sense whatsoever to start claiming that because you're a woman, because you're Black, because you're Asian, because you're this, because you're that, I don't know. I mean, I guess some of that does exist, but I just feel like the hard work and the work ethics and the desire for success, that's what's going to get you there every single time. So it bothers me to see all these lawsuits about, I didn't get the job because I was Black, or I didn't get this because I was whatever. I don't know. Put the work in, I feel like the right people for the job get the job. Maybe I'm being ignorant. Maybe I'm being, I don't know, old fashioned or whatever it is, but I just don't buy that anymore, Linda.
Well, those qualities of persistence and perseverance and getting ahead on your own merit, you're right. Those were qualities that were instilled in us, I think back in the 80s and the 90s. And you don't see that as much anymore. And I know we're quick to fault the schools for allowing, this type of activism into the schools. But I think a lot of these attitudes also come from as a result of the breakdown of families. And, a lot of us came from a different type of family that you see today. It's not, I think that plays a role too. Ideally in a two-parent household, you see children raised with stability emerging stronger. And, so I think that's absent in a lot of today's society.
Well, that's for sure. That's for sure. It's always about the family. I feel like everything starts with the family. That's like the bedrock of our country, which again leads us back to the Black community and the Black Lives Matter issue. And, why would they want to break up the Western nuclear family? There's nothing more powerful than that. So to me, I would think that they would want to strengthen that within their own community as opposed to break it up within everybody else's community.
Well, I think you're right there. But that doesn't fit the Marxist agenda. And like I say, I'm not making up that Black Lives Matter is a Marxist organization. They say it themselves. The three founding women, they were three lesbian founding women that founded Black Lives Matter, and their goals were written out, and you can read it in the book that I mentioned, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. It's available on Amazon as a Kindle. If you try to buy the hard copy, Jeff Bezos took it off, but you can buy it in Kindle, and you can buy the hard copy at DRRON. Martinelli, Dr. Ron Martinelli.com. That book is still selling every single day all around the world. And it's a forensic discussion. It's not an opinion book. It's a forensic discussion of Black Lives Matter. So I, like I say, if I had kids during the week that they are teaching this in school, I would definitely be going on vacation with my kids and not allowing them to be indoctrinated in this way. And we'll be right back.
Thanks for listening. You can tune in to Ladies of Liberty Sound Off weekdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at AmericaOutloud.com.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy, and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to HealthyCell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Don't miss an episode of the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. Subscribe to the podcast. And for the latest news and inspiration, join us back at AmericaOutloud.com.
Back here on the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. And today, our three hosts are myself, Alisa Akringold. I'm a mom of four kids, and I'm a former network news producer. We are also joined by Irit Trat, who is a philanthropist, a mom of three, and she is a freelance writer writing fabulous articles for The American Spectator, The Jerusalem Post, and Al Jazeera. And we also are joined by Linda Martinelli, who is a business owner, very hardworking woman, mom of four as well. And Linda is also the host of Talking While Married, which is a nightly show that she does with her husband, Ron Martinelli, on America Out Loud. So we're going to start off our next segment with the story of the woman who was a former Miss USA and Chelsea Crist, who very tragically jumped to her death off of a midtown high rise in New York City. And what's so tragic of among many things, I mean, it's this young, beautiful woman, 30 years old. What's so tragic is how she was so influenced by what people said about her on social media and how people just scrutinized her over her body and her looks and her age. And, you know, I suppose when you're Miss USA, that's going to happen. People are going to look you up and down inch by inch and feel free to make any comment that they want about you. And the detriment and the devastation that that causes to the psyche of a young woman is so tragic, enough so to make this woman, you know, or at least to contribute to her suicide in this manner, is just absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, this woman was a beloved, young, caring, happy, you know, accomplished woman. And people are just devastated over this. So what bothers us, I guess, so much about this, as we were chatting about earlier, is just the negativity and the nastiness that is so pervasive on social media and the effect that it has on our young. I can say from personal experience, my own daughter, who's 15 years old, has had terrible online bullying issues. And it's like a snowball effect too. As soon as one person says something, other people just feel the need or feel pressured to sort of join in on the nastiness and the meanness. And the effect that it has is so lasting and so impossible to reverse. And I don't know how to control that. I feel very, very sad that this is such an easy way to target people online, and there's no turning back. There's no recourse. Once the word is out, it's out. And the person that is targeted is absolutely devastated and will carry that for the rest of their lives. It scars them. So I'm definitely seeing that. Do you guys see that online as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I have three children, two teenage girls, and just last night, my daughter, who's 13, came to me and just showed me that a classmate of hers was telling other kids to send her names of other students, and she would rate them on a scale of 1 to 10 for how they looked. It's disgusting, and I think part of this falls on parents. They need to monitor what their children are watching, what their children are saying. They should have the passcode to their children's phones. This young woman, Chesley Christ, when she jumped to her death, people were shocked because online she looked to be, just the picture of happiness. She seemed so happy. People were stunned. She had over 500,000 followers on Instagram, over 470,000 followers on TikTok. I truthfully am concerned also for the young ladies who follow her and look to her for inspiration and what they may be thinking. A lot of this had to do, she wrote a piece in Allure magazine about the online trolling she received and how, it helped instill a negative body image. People were telling her that her muscular build was actually a man body. And this has, really detrimental effects on someone. And 22 million teens log into Instagram daily, and the negative effects on their body image, we can't ignore that.
That is for sure. I have to say though, I know that she had also written some entries about how she felt like at the age of 30, she was aging and she was over the hill and she was struggling with that issue. What age of 30 is, you haven't even reached your prime yet. You're just getting there. It's so sad to me that she felt like because she had turned 30, she was over the hill. I mean, you want to cry for this woman and her family. She was a gorgeous, successful, healthy young person. And what an enormous loss I feel like we have for her, with her. I don't know, you want to do something to sort of reassure our young women out there and boys that they have a whole life in front of them and how to deter them. But I do want to say, Iri, like you said, that parents should be monitoring. It's hard to monitor as a parent. I mean, you can do that a little bit, but it is hard to know everything that's going on online in your kid's world. I mean, I can say for sure, and I feel like I have a good relationship with all of my kids, but I know that there is stuff going on that I do not know about. And I don't know how to crack that, Mm-hmm. So what do you have to say?
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, the second I said that, I know at times I'm really good about it. And then at other times I just, don't check. And I guess the biggest thing is open communication between your kids, because, you know, at one point, my older daughter came to me, someone had said something totally inappropriate to her online. And again, I wouldn't have caught that because I wouldn't necessarily be checking her phone, but because she came to me, I was able to, you know, help walk her through what to do next.
That's true. Your open communication is so very important. But, you know, you can't know what happens to your kids at school. And, you know, that sometimes they just don't want to say. And I know that my oldest is my only girl. And when she was in school, you know, it wasn't that she was bullied. It's that she was really left out of everything. She's more studious, more quiet. She wasn't part of the, you know, in crowd of girls, not popular. In fact, she never even had a date in high school. She went on to have an extremely successful life. And it's just that she kind of traveled to the beat of a different drum than a lot of the kids did. And, you know, she's married and she's financially successful now, but it broke my heart back then when one day I went to the school and, you know, everybody's out to lunch and normally you're all sitting with your friends. And there she was sitting all by herself at a table. And it just broke my heart. You don't know a lot of times. So that open communication is important. This tragic death of the 2019 Miss America, it just struck me as so tragic because, you know, I don't do much social media. And the reason I don't do much social media is because of the vitriol that I see on Facebook and the vitriol even 100 times worse on Twitter, where if you say something or if somebody that I respect says something, say on Twitter, and maybe it's a conservative person and they have a conservative perspective, there's 1,000 extremely personal, nasty, vitriolic attacks that come from that on Twitter. And I just find it rather nauseating, to be honest. It just upsets me. It makes my heart hurt. And I can imagine what this woman felt, who may have had her own issues with self-image. You know, we all look in the mirror and we see something, I don't know, something about us that we don't like. And when somebody else magnifies that for you, that's just horrible. And none of us is perfect, but in our own way, we're all perfect. And I just feel like, how dare people say things to other people like they say on Twitter and like they say on Facebook with these personal attacks. It's just, it's so unnecessary. And to me, it speaks volumes more of the person doing the attacking than the person being attacked. But if you're the one being attacked, it certainly doesn't feel that way.
Well, that's for sure. And most of the things I think that we read on social media, the vitriol, those are things that people would never say to the person in real life, face to face. But for some reason, you know, it's on social media, so it seems to be okay. But this is the problem. And, you know, social media is not going anywhere. I mean, that genie has way out of the bottle. And there's really, there's no way to control that or anything like that either. But it does seem that there is sort of this permissiveness to, you know, to attack people online when you would never do something like that in real life. And I do think that the majority of the people who struggle with that the most are young kids who haven't yet formed, you know, maybe don't have the confidence that an adult would have, or, you know, they're so worried about what other people think of them. That's such a raw, sensitive feeling for them. And I see that in my kids, and I see that it's all about what other people think of them. Everything is all about what other people think. And, you know, obviously as they become adults and they get older, right now they're teenagers, but as they get adult, you know, become adults, that hopefully is going to go away and they're not going to care. I mean, somehow I didn't think that until I reached the age of 40, I was kind of like, all right, I finally don't really care what anyone else has to say. So I hope it doesn't take that long, but, you know, So there's sort of this permissiveness online to attack young people because they are the ones that are vulnerable. So I don't know what we do about that. I think that that has to be sort of a collective effort amongst everybody. But, you know, how do you finally, how do you reel that in? And how do you say, you know, I guess it's just a matter of us all teaching our own kids what's right and what's wrong. And, you know, my daughter also had, she had a horrible situation when she was in middle school and people were telling her that, you know, she looked like a boy and, you know, because she's taller and she's got a much more solid build than most other girls that are in middle school. And, you know, I don't think she's now, you know, deep into high school. She's still, I know that still bothers her. So, you know, who knows how this poor woman, Chelsea Christ, was affected by somebody's mean comments and what a tragedy it ended up to be.
Elisa, it's awful because I think, you know, it's big tech too, that's contributing to this issue. And hats off to the Wall Street Journal for running this expose on Instagram, and which really revealed, you know, Instagram's role in body issues for women and instilling this type of warped body image among teens. And actually 6%, I think, of American users trace their desire to kill themselves to Instagram. And because of the Wall Street Journal's expose, you know, Facebook and Zuckerberg and company held off on developing, you know, this Instagram for kids, which was aimed for ages 13 and younger. So of course, like this issue overlaid with the pandemic, and now you have teen girls spending, you know, 7 to 9 hours online a day. You know, I have my older daughter, thankfully, you know, I have to remind her to take her phone with her. She's not into social media. And, you know, and I see that, you know, my middle one, she's quite the opposite. And there's a difference. You know, I have to keep an eye on my middle daughter a little bit more. She's much more in tune with sort of what's cool and her looks, and it's a problem. But this is what happens when you're looking at Instagram, and they're very smart, big tech. They filter out, you know, posts on calorie restrictions and exercise and based on what, you know, a teen girl is looking at through their algorithms, you know, they're able to target specific images and messages that will resonate with teens.
Oh, totally. And I just think that that's horrible. You know, we did a whole show on that a while back. I think it's time to do that again, because it's really interesting what they can find out from you. And I just saw an article recently on Google and all the information that they've collected. And there's actually a way that you can find out about all the information that they've collected on you. I mean, they can track everything. They can track by your phone. And I don't care if you have an iPhone or not an iPhone, they can track where you go, everywhere that you travel. They have so much information on each of us. It's despicable. But, you know, the bottom line is this is just a tragedy. This young lady had she's educated. She was a lawyer. She did everything right in life. And unfortunately, people who probably didn't do everything right in life and were envious of her had things to say that just destroyed her own, you know, personal psyche. And I just think it's tragic. And I want to switch gears for a minute and talk about Whoopi Goldberg. And her opinion that the Holocaust was not about race.
Well, I mean, how ignorant and how stupid could one person possibly be? I mean, and the fact that she actually, after she made that comment, she was interviewed and even doubled down on it was just beyond an outrage to me. And I thought that she should have been fired. I was very happy to see that she had actually gotten suspended from The View. So good on The View for doing that. I'm almost speechless, to be honest, to say that the Holocaust was not about race was the Holocaust is one of the biggest stains on humanity ever. And it was all about race. The entire thing was based on the Jews being an inferior race. And you know, the Germans being the superior race. So to even mention that it was not a racial issue was beyond ignorant to me. I was disgusted.
I was also disgusted. I mean, the book Mouse, I think it's mm-hmm. the graphic novel that the Tennessee school banned, which is about the Holocaust. I mean, opens with a quote from Hitler that states the Jews undoubtedly are a race, but they are not human. And so how Whoopi Goldberg could be so ignorant and call herself an ally of the Jewish community, yet again, is so ignorant about the systematic extermination of the Jewish people is beyond me. I do have to disagree with you, Elisa, though. I'm very disappointed in ABC. I think a two-week suspension is a slap on a wrist. I think they're hoping that in 2 weeks, the news cycle will move on and everyone will forget about what she said. And I'm aggravated because people who have done far less than her have, you know, received far worse punishments. Roseanne Barr also, you know, was fired from ABC. There are two issues at play here. One is Whoopi's comments, I think, are disgusting. But the other is I'm really, really disappointed in how the media elites have come to her defense, including her co-hosts on The View, who are upset that she's been suspended. Another organization I'm really not at all surprised, but annoyed with, the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, which used to be the preeminent organization in fighting anti-Semitism when it was run by Abe Foxman. But it's been taken over by Jonathan Greenblatt, I think in 2015. And he's turned it into, you know, a mouthpiece for the Democratic Party, and it's turned into a partisan organization. He's come to her defense. I guess he was on Don Lemon last night, and he basically said, you know, sometimes we have people in public places who say clumsy things about race, faith, or gender. And he accepted Whoopi's apology, but he didn't give the same courtesy to Tucker Carlson when he used the term replacement in a pedantic sense, not to talk about the Nazi replacement theory. He used it to discuss illegal immigration and about voting. It was in terms of voting rights, not white supremacy. And the amount of energy and resources the ADL spent on trying to get Fox News to fire Tucker Carlson. They maligned Tucker Carlson. So it's interesting, you know, how they treat Whoopi Goldberg or Nick Cannon even, versus someone like Tucker Carlson, who's in the conservative news industry. I think it's unfair. And there's a double standard applied when liberal personalities say anti-Semitic things versus conservative voices.
Boy, that's absolutely true. I'm also disgusted. I think she should have been fired. And as you say, people have been fired for much, much less. And it's just everything you both say is correct. So the fact that Whoopi Goldberg is that ignorant about history, you know, that's a whole problem in this country, is that we are ignorant anymore about what happened in the Holocaust. Why? Because we don't teach it anymore. And, you know, when you go to Germany, they teach it, and their kids have to go to the Hall of Remembrance twice during their school years and walk through there and see from start to end what happened in the Holocaust and the reasons why and how it turned out. And the idea being never forget and never let this happen again. When we don't learn about our history correctly, this is the kind of ignorance that you get. And I worry about the generations in school right now who, you know, we just got done talking about the Black Lives Matter. Boy, they're learning about that, but they're not learning about the things in history that are true in our country. You know, we have had different times in our country where things were acceptable that are not acceptable now. And we need to understand that and put that in perspective instead of doing things like destroying our statues and the things that that are true about what happened in this country. And I admire Germany for keeping the Holocaust and what happened to people in the forefront of people's minds so that it never does happen again, where we want to erase our history and not know. And then you get people like Whoopi Goldberg, who, I mean, they have a huge audience. I don't know why. I've never, ever in my life watched a full show. I've watched snippets that you see on the news or whatever. But I just think those women on that show are just the worst people to listen to, just the worst. And the things that they say are so biased and so wrong on that show that I'm just sad that it's even on the air. And this is just another example. She should have been fired and not given 2 weeks.
She should also change her name from Goldberg, not to say the least. I mean, she has no right whatsoever to be walking around with the name Goldberg. Her name was Karen Johnson. And, you know, she didn't become, you know, she didn't change her name to Whoopi, you know, Hawkins or anything else. She chose a Jewish name for herself. You know, I just think that that's the cherry on the top, if you ask me. She should not come back. She should not have any platform whatsoever, as far as I'm concerned.
Alisa, in our last minute, you brought up something during our commercial break that you need to tell our audience that just happened.
Oh, well, I'm not sure if you guys saw this, but the head of CNN, Jeff Zucker, has resigned in disgrace. And it's because he was having a quote unquote consensual relationship with one of the staffers at CNN. So this after, you know, the whole Chris Cuomo tenure and the support that he had for Chris Cuomo is quite ironic and just very interesting that he's no longer there. I'm not unhappy, gotta say.
Well, ladies, that's a wrap. One more step for womankind.